Knock, knock, guess who is knocking at your door? That's right, you know it's the morning for sure. Might be a geography, it could be. Maybe it's Mitt Romney. You know you love This Week in Mormons, original Mormon news. If you love Lindsey Sterling, Bryce Harper in Utah, and Jell-O salad foods, oh, you're gonna love this show.
Thanks for tuning in, everybody. It's time for This Week in Mormons. I'm coming to get you. That's right. We're here. Do you think this is easy to do? This is the 300.
I'm coming to get you.
Out of the 345 episodes, I have not introed less than three times.
What are you trying to say, Jeff? What is it? Get it out.
I'm saying that I want us to be on equal footing, equal people with equal responsibilities.
Equal people? Is this some kind of a joke?
No. I believe in socialism.
Thank you, Bernie Sanders.
You're welcome.
You Democrat.
Well, he was only became a Democrat to run for president. Anyway, folks.
Did you see he headed up to the North Dakota pipeline?
Was he standing with the tribes to stop it?
Yeah. And then they started arresting the protesters there. This is a weird political subject for me. I'm good friends with a lot of people that run a lot of pipeline. they run pipe, these guys.
A lot of people are laying pipe. You know, a lot
up
of
through the Northern Territories, they're pipe layers.
Uh-huh, sure, yeah, right.
And they scoff at people. They're like, no, and they're like, this is better for the environment. It's better for everything.
Of course,
blah,
they
blah,
do.
Blah,
they're
blah.
They're it's their money. Why? What else?
It's their gig. I know. But Jeff, our views on issues are built by those that we surround ourselves with.
That's also very true. That's why it's good to do your best to surround yourself with different ideas to have more balance. We do ourselves a disservice when we only surround ourselves with those with whom we agree, or by those with.
Yeah, this is why Facebook is going to be the demise.
Facebook,
of any free thinking people.
It's an echo chamber. It's terrible.
It is the worst. When you say, I hate everything that's going on up in North Dakota, and everybody else says, you're right, it makes us feel good about that opinion instead of saying, why do you hate this?
Yeah, and even I get sucked in. You know, I'll enjoy a good back and forth. I try not to do it as much anymore, but the problem is...
Well, but it's more to fight than it is to, like, find the right opinion, right?
It kind of is. Like, I agree. It's almost like the debate-y side of me instead enjoys getting into it.
On Facebook. We read a bunch of articles so we can go on there and look smart. I do the same thing.
Yeah.
I do the same thing. But the North Dakota one is one that I don't exactly understand all the stuff in there because... Yeah, there's a lot of inputs into that equation, I feel like.
Right. That is absolutely true.
Anyway.
North Dakota.
How was your week? I see you have happy birthday things behind you. Happy birthday.
My birthday was last week, Al. Thanks for remembering.
Why don't you take the decorations down, Jeff?
I don't know, because I like having them there. What can I say?
I like them, too. I'm going to wish you a happy birthday every week.
I came home from a business trip, and there was a banner up that says, Happy Birthday, Daddy, with scribbles on it from my son. How could I not want us to have that?
Who would have ever imagined we'd go on business trips? How prestigious is this? Look at us, business trips.
Look at me hanging
we
out.
We go
in
away,
one of the
and we
lamest cities in North Carolina.
We expense things and
stuff.
Oh,
yeah, absolutely. I get a per diem.
Oh, my gosh. I'm going to have the steak dinner, and I'm getting them loaded, thanks, with the mushrooms.
I did have a steak dinner because it was my birthday, and I had one. And I didn't tell my colleagues I was with because I just don't want to be like, hey, everyone, it's my birthday. But so finally that night after we'd worked.
No, you don't say that. You say, oh, it's my birthday. Let's go and do something fun. You don't have to say, hey, everybody.
No, what I said was we had some choices for dinner. I said, well, guys, you know what? Today is my birthday, and as such, I would enjoy the steakhouse since we've talked about it. Let's get some steak. I want a steak.
And they said, no.
Nope. And I had craft brewed root beer, which you would appreciate, I think.
Oh, yes.
And had some delicious desserts.
Hey.
Oh, Fayetteville, you stole my heart and my wallet. And it was good.
What a wonderful time, Jeff. You've You've made it sound magical.
Anyway, that's where I was last week, and it was wonderful to come home and be back with my family and just get back in the swing of things. A funny thing for me is many of you know I work in foreign affairs, and so I work on the federal government's fiscal year, which ends in September. As such, my company does an open PTO policy where it's not as much that we earn vacation time, and instead we have a set number of hours we need to work in a fiscal year, which is equivalent with like having X number of weeks off of vacation. It lines up the same way, but it gives you a bit more flexibility. Yes. So I realized this week when I went to work and crunched some numbers that I only had about 27 hours left that I needed to work in the fiscal year. And I was like, well, I'm going to only be here for 3 hours a day. So nice to see all of
you. That's kind of a great realization when you're just like, all right, peace, everybody.
Yeah, I mean,
Uncle Jeff's paid his dues.
I'm gonna go over no matter what, but I thought I was actually kind of lined up, especially because the tonsillectomy and stuff, where I had to take some more time off. I thought I was gonna be behind, but instead I was just surprised and said, "Okay, well, cool." So I don't think I've worked a full 8 hours at all yet this week, and I don't intend to.
Neither should
I. Left today at 2 p.m. and took my family to a Nationals game, and we sat there and watched baseball, and my boy slouched on our tummies and ate snacked on crackers and looked entirely disinterested. It was a lovely evening. What more could I want?
Everything sounds magical.
Everything is going aces for me, buddy. It's been a true delight. And by the way, Utah, flying out there next week, just so you know, like if you get up on Thursday morning and things feel sunnier for you for some reason, that's because my presence is there in the state, in general Wasatchia, and you are feeling it.
Where is this? In Utah.
Wasatchia.
You think you'll make Utah sunnier.
I basically believe that if you will feel better in the time I'm there, it's because I am there. I am carrying with me
the power
of my chi. And
I can feel that. Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely. So that's what's going to happen there. Alan, my boy, what's going on with you?
The normal amount. Was this Labor Day? What day?
No, Labor Day was Labor Day was last week.
Oh boy. I don't know that I did anything. I was back in Utah. I was with beautiful woman. I ate dinner.
Yes.
And then
I'm beating you right now. This is good. I like this.
Oh man.
Yes.
This never happens.
Also, just to lay it on thicker, I reorganized my Elder's Quorum presidency. Other heavyweight items I did over the weekend. Ha ha.
That's big.
It keeps going.
That is big. Yeah. I went to my buddy's baby blessing.
Boring.
We blessed his baby. And it was lovely, and I ate pulled pork on a homemade roll with homemade chocolate chip cookies, and it was delicious, Jeff. Delicious.
I mean, that sounds fine, except you didn't come to my baby blessing, so...
Yeah, to be fair...
There were conflicts, I know, it was okay.
You don't live where I live.
Do you live where I live?
A star is born. yeah. No, so... Man, I swear I had some really interesting things.
You sound exactly like me every week right now. I love this.
Oh, this is the worst now. This is outstanding. This is the worst. This is what it's like to be in a relationship.
This is what it's like to be me. Isn't this great?
Oh, my gosh. Jeff, I can't have this.
Isn't it great when the highlight of your week is watching Seinfeld for 2 hours with your significant other? That's the dream.
I didn't do that. We didn't do that. No, I went to the fair. I did go to the fair last night.
Please tell me.
Where Blues Traveler was playing, but it rained, and so literally nobody was there. There was like 9 people there for Blues Traveler.
Someone else told me, I think it was one of my colleagues last week, that they also saw Blues Traveler at a fair once, and that they were bad live. Now, I never pictured Blues Traveler being a very good band live, like they're a jam band. Were they bad live?
It's one guy. No, I didn't think that. I would think it's him. He's bad live, but he's not bad live. He's bad live when he was skinny. He got fat again, and so he brought the heat.
Like Peter Jackson.
He is a big fella.
Yes.
Yeah, he is a big fella. And to be able to blow that harmonica with that weight behind him. Woo-hoo.
John Popper is his name, and he wears a vest to keep... Did he wear his vest of many harmonicas?
I didn't pay to go and see him. I just looked over the fence.
When you're a serious harmonicist... You wear a vest because harmonicas are all in different keys, so you have to use them for different. You know, it's a mess. Anyway, you get to wear a cool vest with harmonicas in it.
So after I saw him, I went over and I went to the circus where there was some Colombian fellows that tight walked up and around and they jumped over each other. It was very fun.
Is this in Missouri?
No, this is in Utah. This is Utah State Fair. And then I went to Starship 4000. Where it spins you around.
You mean the ride where it just spins you hard.
Banging on the walls, getting everybody to go with me. I chanted one more time, and the guy kept it going.
That is because carnies are terrifying people. And
it's a weird place. So this guy, so it's one of those like just spin, and you spin really fast. And
it looks like a UFO.
Where you're standing.
And the plank slides up.
Yeah,
right?
Where you're standing slides up, and you're going to throw. But the guy in the middle, I thought he didn't spin. He spins with you. It's slower. Naturally, it's slower, but like still, that guy is spinning for most of his day.
That's why carnies have these addled brains. They're all hanging out in Starship 4000 at least once or twice.
You gotta wonder, do they ever show up and just like rock that? They're like, all right, everybody meet there, and we're gonna go twice as fast.
When we were in Seattle a few months ago, we ducked by. There was like a little fair, a little impromptu fair, and they actually had the Starship. But the thing that I thought was funniest was the carnies were wearing. Basically, carnies have jumped the shark and being carnies. They were wearing T-shirts that said hashtag Carny Life. Like now they know they're self-aware is what I'm saying. The carnies are self-aware.
They've become self-aware.
So now it's all meta and it's lost all meaning. It's not as fun as it used to be. It's we can't laugh at them behind their back. Now they're in on the joke. So I feel like Heavenly Father wants us to laugh.
Like Indian people and their accent. Now that they know they speak English in a weird way, they almost make fun of us.
That it's basically the exact same thing, Al.
I don't know if that's true. I just no, but it's a weird place going to a fair. I mean, it's just a gross place, but very fun. Was
Steve Solberg there? You know, running the activities, telling everyone they were doing a good job.
He was. He got us in free. That's why I went to the fair,
of course.
And. No, he had a couple of good stories from the whole shebang too. Just why people live the way they do? I don't know. I mean, it's such a weird thing to walk through there, and it's raining and cold and gross, and you're just like, I wish all you people had a home that you could go to.
Going to the Utah State Fair is like going to Lagoon minus Wicked and Cannibal. That's really it's the
and
same
there
thing.
Are no dysfunctioning fountains that make it look like a ghost land. Lagoon. When you go to Lagoon. It feels like you're walking through a Chernobyl apartment complex.
It's just Pripyat.
Everything's set up like there should be people there, and you're just like, where are the fans?
Should we go to Lagoon when I'm out there?
Absolutely.
I think that's what we should do with
it. It'll be Halloween Scarefest thing.
Oh, perfect. I'm happy about that. Well,
be nice.
Folks, before we get to news, by the way, I should have led off with this before you all tuned out because of the 12 odd minutes of banter. But this week,
Jeff, I tell you, I'm only here for the banter.
Well,
the second you start shutting my banter down, I leave.
Just so you know, we will be joined later on by some of the folks behind the upcoming film, The Last Descent, about the death of the Nutty Putty Caves. You've probably seen that, especially if you were in Utah. So a couple of the producers and directors.
Hours.
Yeah, will be joining us, though, later in the show. So make sure you stay tuned for that, for our interview with them. But this week, I would like to lead off with a very important bit of news, everybody. Finally, the last step for the church in social media dominance, other than making a VKontakte page, which maybe it has one, or something for Orchid or whatever. But the LDS Church joined Snapchat last week, Al. Can you believe that you can now follow the church on Snapchat? Snapchat.
It's all just Moroni's boobs.
Snaps. All these snaps. I don't fully understand the church's strategy with Snapchat. It's a more difficult medium to master to handle messaging along those fronts. Because what are you going to do? Snapchat exists for people to just put random photos that show up for 10 seconds and it's amusing. And then you move on. It's not a place.
All right, I got to follow them. Where's their QR code?
There's no QR code, but I link to it in the article, Al. It's LDS Church on Snapchat. So I'm sure if you search for that, you'll find it.
Let's see. I'm gonna add a friend, add by username, LDS Church.
And you know what are they gonna push out in these quick things? It's a bit different when you're a full content producer like the church as opposed to a lay user. But
let's see what they're doing here.
In the spirit of that, and some people were upset by this, I decided that what the missed.
Why would they be upset?
Because they don't have good senses of humor. Basically, I think the great thing about Snapchat are the funny lenses and filters they have nowadays, where you can do. It's very impressive technology, where you can do.
Well, they're telling stories.
Yeah, you can do things to.
We say there are laws that help tell stories, guidelines, and commandments to help ensure our spiritual safety. Thomas S. Monson. Oh, they're working quotes into this?
Oh, my gosh.
That's pretty exciting.
Well, what's more exciting would be an image of Elder Quentin L. Cook with hearts and a bow on his face. I think that's more fun. Just saying.
I'd agree with that.
I'm just saying. If the brethren were to pick up Snapchat and get to play with it, that would be more exciting. I want
the
Hal Eyring Snapchat account.
Give me Henry B. Eyring with the puppy dog ears and just doing the tongue. Blah.
This is what we need. And we know that President Eyring, President Nukedorf, some of the other ones have the best sense of humor about these things. So I think we could really make it happen. I think we could get Elder Renlund in on this. His stock is already soaring amongst the populace.
That Quentin L. Cook picture you put on that post is awful, by the way.
I know. It's like the worst thing ever, right? And I stumbled upon that one. I was just messing with them, and I swiped across that lens, and I said, yes, 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 1,000 times yes.
Ugh, that is disgusting. I can't look at that.
He spoke out here. He spoke at a fireside out here. There was a young adult fireside, married or single, over the weekend. They broadcast it from the Washington, D.C. Stake Center, though. He was out here. And I believe he spoke about social media some.
That sounds
how we
right.
need to be, you know, careful with it. I also heard there was a regional conference with Elder Ballard in Utah. Did you attend this at all?
There was. I did not know about it because I'm not in a ward out there yet. And so I faithfully went to attend my own ward.
And nobody was
and,
there.
I've
heard he made fun of Pokemon Go, basically in the way an old man who does not understand what it is would do.
So some friends of mine did go and had good notes on it, and he mentioned Pokemon Go as just a time waster. You're just wasted time.
Well, a lot of things we do are a waste of time.
Which, you know, like, I look back and I say, hey, you know that wooden wheel you used to push around with a stick? What was that, reading books? No, you were just wasting time.
Or the stick pole, for that matter, is wasted time.
When you're chewing on rock candy instead of Laffy Taffy, what are you doing? That's supposed to last you 9 hours. You're just wasting time. So don't you talk to me about good use of time. No, no. It took you 9 hours to get dressed with that corset button thing up and down your body.
So,
if you cared about time, we would not be having this conversation.
Bringing it back, though, full circle, Al, how do you feel about the church being on Snapchat as, you know, as one who has, of course, done social media strategy as well? What do you feel good about this one, or do you think this is one of the more difficult channels for them to master compared to the other ones they've hopped on in recent years?
No, I think it's great. So the idea, the strategy here is that you start showing up in people's story feed. This
right.
is the way that you're supposed to consume in Snapchat is you go in there and you watch through all your stories in a day. And if they can have a bit of inspiration in there, I think that's great. Good for them. How would this be a bad thing?
I don't know. Bully for you. It doesn't say it would be a bad thing.
Now
it would be fine.
They'd be particularly smart if they embraced Pokemon Go instead of shunning it like an old man.
Also a fair point.
No offense.
No offense taken.
Thank you.
Just because it was my
birthday. Let's see. We should talk about Elder Holland.
Okay.
Elder Holland has some words to say.
Share with me the words.
He spoke, where was this? This was over in England.
He's over at Windsor Castle at a conference in England.
I just feel like any invitation to Windsor Castle is the right thing. You should go to Windsor Castle.
Yeah, I think we could all agree with that. That's true.
So he's talking on religious persecution, the driver for forced migration. This is a 5-day conference, and so he was speaking a little bit in it, but he made a quote that got a little bit of play. He said that we need, hold on, where is this? Where's the quote in here? We need...
Look for the poll quote, Al. Find the poll quote.
We need... Yeah. Okay. All right. I get it, Jeff. I don't know where it is in here. Anyway, he says that we need more outrage at the plight of refugees.
Yeah.
Right? So, like we need... We, as a people...
It's in the second paragraph,
more frustrated.
By the way.
The world needs more outrage than it is. When we read of the persecution, the violence, the sexual violence, the murder, the rape, the destruction of families, and any social structure that these people have, almost entire cultures being destroyed. This is interesting because I think we've fallen into a little bit of a lull as people where we hear about it so often. I mean, you see pictures of some of these refugee camps, and it just rolls off of us. We're just like, well, yeah, man, that is rough. And we talked about this before, of just almost our inability to feel some of the emotion that needs to go along with this.
Sure.
But it's pretty powerful to have Elder Holland stand up and say, we need to be more outraged when we read about this stuff, when we hear about this stuff. We need to stand up and start trying to make a difference in whatever sphere we have, instead of just saying, poh, the world is crazy out there. What a time.
I also appreciate that he is speaking about the sexual violence that often besets refugees. And that's not something
sexual
we hear a
violence,
lot about.
Sexual violence, rape, destructions of families.
We don't hear a lot about that in general reporting, at least of all from church reporting. And that's a major, major issue that refugees are so often treated like second-class citizens or not even humans, that they're also looked upon as easy prey for sexual predators. That's terrible. And it's great to see that being called out, to remind ourselves that part of helping refugees is, it goes beyond clothing them and feeding them. It is giving them a safe place to be where they will not be under threat of sexual or other violence at the same time, that they can be safe. And that's huge. We all deserve to be safe. We're Heavenly Father's children. And the fact that there are millions, I mean, what are the estimates nowadays? About 4 million refugees in the world?
17.
So, no, not 4. 40 million refugees, I think. An incredible number of refugees, of people who are not safe. And Elder Holland wants us to be more upset about this and to feel compelled to help make it better for people. And also, by way of sort of update, so this is from a Catholic publication called the Boston Pilot. And they talk about some of the church's involvement.
The Bible. It's called the Bible.
Okay.
That's a joke about Catholicism.
So we talked about how the church has donated some more money for refugee assistance recently. But this goes into more detail from the Catholic perspective. The church donated $1.25 million in a grant form to the U.S. Conference. Sorry, not the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, but to the U.S. Bishops Migration and Refugee Service. What's interesting about this is it means these funds are allocated specifically to resettle refugees in the United States, which I don't think the church itself publicizes very much when the newsroom covers things like this. And I don't think that makes it any more or less important, but that's a great thing to remember, is that the church isn't just trying to take the fight to Europe, and if it's that case with European refugees, you know, all the Middle Eastern ones settling there. They are saying, no, bring them to the States and let us help create the infrastructure to handle that. And not to get political, but that's also another thing, in my opinion, that just goes right in the face of a lot of what we've seen this election cycle. That when the church is putting its money where its mouth is and reminding certain politicians who shall remain nameless that refugees have a place in our society.
Hillary Trump.
Uh-huh. That's the one. And we have a duty to do that. So interesting to find out where the money's going. That's all.
Well, it's interesting. It's interesting, too, that I feel like in the church, this is not a unanimous vote, right? I feel like there's a lot of people that would probably object to that money going to help bring refugees to America, which I kind of like. I kind of like that we're restating the with emphasis sort of our stance on this, because it's easy to say, well, we believe in this, everybody, we want to encourage this, and then when money is actually being spent there, it's like,
I actually should evaluate my position
because the church stands prominently on the other side of this.
And here's another good reason perhaps why we don't have the financial transparency.
Jeff.
The financial transparency in the church. We talk about that, but how we're all going to quarterback it if we find out every little thing, right? There would be people who take issue with with so many different things. That's not to say we wouldn't enjoy knowing some of
all of the things.
But this is a good example of why that could be the case.
Hey, did you see the goofiness going on around the Tempview High School cheerleader uniforms?
School district, you wacky place. What is going on?
So I want to paint a picture of. I want to paint a picture of. Imagine cheerleader uniforms that look exactly like every other school's in America.
Okay, I have a word picture.
All right, you got it. Now there is a mother and a son that decided those were too sexy, too much sexy time, and wrote a letter saying, "You are making my son horny."
Was it the bloomers? It's always the bloomers. That's what does it.
It was no, it was not the bloomers.
Was it the male cheerleaders? Is this really a bigger issue with the sons dealing with something else?
They were not the tight pants of the male cheerleaders. This was only the rockin' skirts of the female cheerleaders that were sexualizing this boy's mind.
He can't control himself.
And so the mom took issue with the fact that he had. You know, that he was very into women, and wrote a letter, a strongly worded letter, aided only by natural light, and it got a lot of responses from people that were saying, "Hey, lady, chill out.
You cannot possibly expect men to control."
Even
their
one of the cheerleaders
thoughts.
Said, "Hey, quit sexualizing. It's not my job to make your son not want to do terrible things. So lay off."
I think the bigger issue with cheerleaders, this is fine, but if we ever want to make a major issue out of it. I've always found interesting that BYU's cheerleaders wear sleeveless tops, like cheerleaders do, right? That's normal.
It's called a uniform. Yeah, is it weird that swimmers wear bikini bottoms?
It's absolutely freaky deaky in my mind.
Yeah. Is it weird that pole vaulters and track and field people also wear uniforms appropriate to that sport?
Absolutely.
Isn't it?
I'm just saying, yeah. you could lead the cheer and cheer the lead while having capped sleeves. Would it not be possible? Would it not?
Jeff, where in the scriptures does it speak of cap sleeves?
Everywhere. Have you read Doctrine and Covenants section 139?
While not wearing your garments, participating in this sport, what purpose
official
would cap sleeve
declaration serve? Four. Read it.
Shut up. Shut up.
Read it. Yeah, but that's ridiculous. The whole Tempview thing is, I guess it's all blown over and the school district apologized.
It's great. It's dumb. It's people took it. People should feel silly and like a bunch of dummies when they bring stuff up like that.
We can be stupid, as it turns out.
Yeah.
As it turns out. Can. So going back into politics, because, you know, it has to be the twin political hour. People just, they tune in for this all the time. Article here from our friend Hunter Schwartz. Hunter, shout out to you, my friend. Hunter interviewed me once for BuzzFeed, so always got to give Hunter some love.
He's not my friend.
He's a very nice guy. Oh,
I don't believe
Hunter,
it.
By the way, as an aside, Hunter is friends with McKay Coppins, and we're friends with people in our ward who are friends with McKay Coppins, and they went to brunch with McKay on Saturday. And
yeah.
We said, well, dude, you got to get him on the show. And my wife was sitting there kind of laughing about it. She's like, well, he doesn't even know you guys exist. And then my friend, he's like, oh no, he knows who Jeff is in a very disparaging way.
You're on the radar.
He's like, oh no, he knows who they are. He knows exactly. So I'm trying to get McKay to come be on the show. He's got a book to promote. We'll be nice to him. I feel like now it's just like the dream of having McKay Coppins on the show with us.
If McKay Coppins came on the show, we'd never do another episode after that. It would just be done.
That would be our Seinfeld finale.
That's the bookend. Absolutely.
So anyway, Hunter writes an article here about a new Pew study.
Because if McKay came on, we would only talk to him about his articles on funeral potatoes and what the top 10 things to make for General Conference meals are.
Yes, he will never be more to us than he was in 2010. That's, you know.
Which would be, I would be very entertained at that. I wrote a book. I've interviewed presidential candidates. Anyway, McKay, tell us about the Jell-O salad that you wrote about.
Here would be the ultimate show. If we get Donald Trump on the show and we get McKay on the same show and we have an intervention between the two of them and make them bury
guys,
the hatchet.
We've invited your dear friend, Mr. Trump, McKay Coppins.
Remember the ogler? The ogler himself?
Remember the things that he looked at your wife? I think that'd be great.
We're not making a good case here. If McKay happens to listen to this, I want him to realize that we are a safe place, a place where he can come and...
No, that's not true. No, this is a hostile environment. We'll call him a coward.
Well, we will call him a coward, but we'll do it in a funny way so that he'll still feel good about himself. Yeah. And we'll let him promote his book. So
it would be a battle of witticisms.
I would have to prepare. I'd watch all of his MSNBC interviews. I'd really profile him well and understand what
the challenge has been issued, Mr. McKay Coppins.
McKay, the ball is in your court. Will you answer the call? We're running up to the election. Now's a perfect time for you to show up on TWIM.
All right, so anyway, Hunter Schwartz.
Anyway, point is, Pew study shows that only 48% of the members of the church who are registered voters consider themselves Republican. That's actually a drop from 61% in 2012, which is significant.
Whoa.
Obviously, during 2012, Mitt Romney ran, so that might have inflated the numbers, understandably. But of course, we typically regard, Mormons regard themselves as Republicans in general. So,
Yeah, that's a big deal.
Dropping down to 48 is a big deal, actually. That's a significant dip from where it's been.
Wait, do people believe that the Evan McMullen party is its own party?
I think so. I hope so.
That's
what
happened.
Wins. I really want Evan McMullen to win Utah, just to mix it up. Why is he not in the debates? Hashtag let Evan debate.
LED. That's perfect.
Forget Gary Johnson, folks. Let all of them debate. Let every candidate who's registered to run, let them all do it. So I don't know. This is it's interesting. Now, of course, that's still more. 35% identify now as independent. Only 13 is Democrats. But it's still down. Of course, a lot of this, Trump is very unpopular with Mormons. I've heard that. But I also think that Mormons are moderating out a bit more in the U.S. in general. I think we're becoming less monolithic as a political body in general. Republicans are still a plurality and probably will remain so. But times are changing. I think really the independent vote is what's growing because of Evan McMullen.
So there's a great post by Richard Osler, who is a bishop who shared a blog post about the things that he did with his single people who didn't quite know, quote unquote, the church is true.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we should file this under sort of common sense, but it's helpful to review sometimes. He says, When I'd have people, so he's over a singles ward of about 300 people, and they'd come to him with their faith crises, and they would say, I'm not sure. And he has a couple of tips. He says, I avoid telling people just to be more faithful.
That's actually really good. That's
good saying, thing. Read more, pray more, study more. It sort of diminutizes their effort up to that point. That's not helpful. He also says that he accepts that not everyone will fit into the quote, I know, unquote, crowd, which is good. It's, you know, to believe Elder Uchtdorf has talked about it. Elder Holland has talked about it. This is not just for the I knows. This is a hospital for the sick. He says, I resist the temptation to bear testimony at this group.
That's
helpful,
one.
Right?
That's
nothing says, I do not understand your plight, like telling them they're wrong. I work on truly listening. I trust that they are receiving personal revelation. I know my own testimony is a work in progress. And I focus on strengths and I strive to make a bigger tent. Seems pretty reasonable. If you have people in your life that are struggling, these are great.
We actually had comments on our Facebook page that sort of said, well, I think this bishop needs to kind of recheck how he thinks his testimony is. I think these were serious comments. That the bishop is clearly misguided, the fool that he is.
No,
I disagree with that.
People, we got to move past that idea. Oh my gosh!
As long as we cleave to the, if I am not perfect now in this life, I am an unworthy saint, and as such, I should be depressed about my station. That we're never going to advance as a people. No. Christ said, "Be ye therefore perfect." He did not say, "Be ye therefore perfect before your 40th birthday." He understands that those things take time, and that we are human, and that we're perfected in Him. We're not going to be perfect people at the gate. That's not to say we don't try. That's not to say we don't set our sights high
there
and work for
is.
Things, but we can't beat ourselves. It drives me crazy.
There still is a group of people in the church that feel like the only right way is pretending that there is no...
There's nothing wrong.
Doubt.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, the difference, like, as soon as you know, you no longer have faith. And this life is more about faith than it is about knowing. And so let's embrace the space of having faith. if we may.
Absolutely. I think we vilify the idea of belief.
Of needing faith. Yeah, absolutely.
Of being unsure. And I find it refreshing when I'm in. And it can be jarring in a way because we're so used to some of the roteness of testimony meetings. When somebody gets up and they might say, I have issues with this and that. I don't understand everything, but I believe in these good things, and that's why I am here. I respect people who do that because I know that's not easy, for one, especially in a church where there is often a zeitgeist of perfection or the pursuit or assumption of it. It's a hard thing to do, but, you know, do those things. Don't be afraid. We're away from testimony meeting now, but we'll have it again in a few weeks. Like, don't feel afraid. Just talk about what you believe. Preach about what you believe. Testify about what you believe. And I have found, personally, Al, I remember when President Packer gave those remarks where he said, you know, you find a testimony in the bearing of it, which when I first heard those remarks, I thought that sounded insane because how could you talk about stuff you don't know? But I have found that if you bear testimony of what you believe or those things that you do know, I have had witness born to me in the process of doing so that things are true. And it's weird how it works that way. And that requires, like you said, faith. You know, you take the faith, the way you're doing is right, and you stay the course. You don't hop out of the boat, and you do your best. Heavenly Father knows that. He knows who we are. It turns out he loves us.
Turns out.
Go figure.
Upon further investigation. Well, we have a few others, Jeff. The Holy War is a pointless war. Things like comic strips called The Pickle.
Why is the Holy War pointless? Because they don't even because they don't play in the same conference and the game doesn't matter in the end. Yeah.
James the Mormon loves BYU.
He really
all loves things we knew. So some good stuff.
Here's the question: is James the Mormon, is BYU paying money for these James the Mormon videos? Is my tithing that goes to
full
BYU?
Access? He gets full access to the cheerleaders, and I think that's why he's doing it. This is all a play.
Well, as we said before, we are happy to bring some guests on the show this week. Some of you might remember a month or so ago we talked about a movie coming out called The Last Descent, which is the sad true story of a terrible accident at the Nutty Putty Caves in Utah. But a film, of course, The Last Descent, is out about that, and we're pleased to be joined by Reg Flake and Brian Fugel.
Yep.
The second assistant director and producer / first assistant director, respectively, of The Last Descent.
With all due respect, if I may.
Correct. You got that
so
right.
Welcome, everybody. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Now,
thank you.
Great to be here.
Now, this is effectively the Mormon 127 hours. Is that right?
Exactly. Not quite the same.
Only because
ending.
It happened in Utah. Right. Wait, they both happened in Utah.
The first was the Mormon 127 hours.
That's true. And I think it's got a little bit of a twist on it that if you're Mormon, you'll be like, oh, I recognize that. But for the most part, our target audience isn't the Mormon market. It's the general audience.
What's the twist? Do you want to?
He's in his garments. He goes to the cave in his garments.
No,
well, there's some like surrealness to it that makes it almost spiritual, but
so there's some Terrence Malick in there, is what you're saying?
Oh, definitely. The producer, the director, my brother is Isaac Halasima, and a few years back I said you got to watch Terrence Malick, and he's like, I don't know, and then he saw it. Especially Tree of Life. I have the Tree of Life movie poster hanging up in my office right now. I love Terrence Malick. I told him to watch it. He watched it, and he was just totally inspired by that. So you'll see a lot of that influence in this movie, Terrence Malick-y. So going back to kind of the little bit of the twist on it, it does touch on the afterlife a little bit, kind of like, you know, the filmmaker's interpretation of what it might be like and how it relates to this man and his life and his situation.
It's got like a hint of a near death experience kind of thing, but it's not like really strong.
Okay, Reg. Now for those or either of you, so for those who don't know, you know what the Nutty Putty Caves are or any of that, could you, someone please just give us a rundown of what are the Nutty Putty Caves? Why was somebody there? What set this up? What was the premise? What goes on in this movie?
You want me to do it, Reg?
Go for it.
Great. Cool. So the Nutty Putty Cave is a very unique formation. It's an extinct geyser. So imagine Yellowstone, all of the, you know, Old Faithful. Imagine being able to climb down inside of that and not die, boiled to death, you know? This cave is, like I said, extinct geyser. So the rock formations inside of it are very unique. You don't see them anywhere else unless you find another extinct geyser, which are very rare. And so when cavers discovered it and the word got out about it, it became a very popular spot for scout troops, for anybody really, dates. Lots of youth groups would go out there.
And where is it? I know it's in Utah, but I've never been there. Like, where is it?
So it's just east of Utah Lake, or west of Utah Lake. Sorry, west.
Yeah, just west. Yep, just on the opposite
Eagle Mountain.
Side from civilization.
It's Eagle Mountain.
Just so around Eagle Mountain.
Eagle Mountain, yep.
Okay. So anyway, continue. So it's a cave, and people have gone there.
Yep, people go in there, and it became really popular because it had really tight passageways, and also the sediment and like the interior of it had this warmth to it because it still had a little bit of that thermal heating from way down deep, and it made the walls kind of soft and putty-like. That's how it got its name.
Well, and yeah, Nutty Putty is like another name for like some of the stalagmite things, like the substance they're made of, essentially.
Yeah,
I feel like the people that would use that name instead of stalactite would be like, I mean, that's
only in Utah. Only
9-year-olds. Who's calling them Nutty Putty?
Well,
this
isn't
a scientific term.
Actually, I really do believe that spelunkers call some of that stuff Nutty Putty.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's not intimidating at all. They should really use a more complex vernacular.
Well, you can imagine our difficulty in finding a name for the movie. Tragedy at Nutty Putty Cave. You know, it just doesn't have that.
No, it's not a scary ring, yeah.
No. So it was difficult in that sense, definitely. But
So what happened? So this is the story of brother Jones, I believe. Yes.
Yeah, John Jones. Yep. So he had been away for school. He was going to be a doctor, and he was coming back to visit for Thanksgiving break. And he and his family had always been big cavers. This was one of their favorite spots. At this point, though, there were so many problems with people getting stuck in there. Like, you know, like I said, lots of tight passageways. People would get stuck a lot, go into different parts of the cave that weren't smart to go into, and have to be rescued. So he and his brother got a special permit that they needed at this point. It had been closed for a while because somebody got stuck, and so they had just opened it up, and they said, okay, if you want to do it, you have to get a special permit and follow all these guidelines. And he got it, surprised his brother with these permits right as he got into town for Thanksgiving break, said, hey, let's just head over to the cave real quick before we go home. So they went straight from the airport to the cave and decided to do a little spelunking before they head home and stuff themselves with Thanksgiving dinner.
Which if you're going through narrow passageways, you should always do that before Thanksgiving dinner.
Definitely. And there's a little, the rescuer, her name's Susie. She's a really spunky character in the movie. You know, John Jones, he's a very, very nice guy. He was apologizing as they're trying to rescue him and save his life. He's sitting there apologizing for making them go out on Thanksgiving or before Thanksgiving. And she makes a little joke about, well, it's a good thing it's before Thanksgiving and not after Thanksgiving, or else we'd be, you know, you'd be in even worse case.
I scooped the joke.
But yeah.
Don't spoil all the best lines, guys.
Spoiler alert. I should have said that before, huh?
So yeah. Of all the movies to make, why this one? Like, what's special about, a hiker getting stuck in a cave and, having that be an unfortunate event?
Go for it.
I think that it just originated from like people actually watching this on the news and experiencing this with them, you know, and feeling some compassion and some empathy for the family, and then just, you know, that story always in the back of your mind that of this thing that happened, and it was an option, an opportunity to share someone's life. Mm-hmm. With everyone else.
Hmm. Right. As filmmakers, you like to look for stories that strike a chord with a large group of people. And here in Utah, anybody that was around in 2009 will tell you they remember this story. And so at that point, the challenge for the writer and director, Isaac Halosima, was to put an inspiring twist on such a tragedy. And I think he did a really great job of that.
And I think also to do justice to the real event. That's part of it.
And I was going to ask you about that, because I mean, obviously you don't want to give everything away, but yeah, how do you create a story with momentum? Mm-hmm. And because, unlike, you know, Al joked about this being 127 hours, but in 127 hours he survived. In this case, not so much. So obviously there's a potentially very bleak ending.
Definitely.
Obviously you've talked some about the afterlife. I mean, how did you guys approach that when trying to say, well, if we can't tell the story straight up as is, because that would just leave on a sad note. What do we do to make this a worthwhile film from a story perspective?
Well, you know, there's a little bit of creative liberties when it comes to how, I mean, there's only so much you could say about the afterlife that's found within scripture, you know? So a lot of that was creatively, a lot of those gaps were filled in creatively. And the writer did a great job. The director did a great job of threading a theme throughout the whole movie. I'm not going to spoil it for you, because it is a pretty creative way of kind of touching on the afterlife and explaining these things, and then having a really great payoff at the end of the movie for things that you've been seeing throughout the whole movie that you may not understand.
Well, and one of the main devices that you see in any film, really, that is being used also in this film is flashbacks. I mean, definitely. You couldn't really tell a story of a man that's just trapped in a cave for that long, if he's just sitting there. But if we're going back and forth from the cave into his life and mm-hmm. experiences he's had to kind of tell a story.
Oh, we lost Reg. He's back.
Was it just me?
Yeah, no, you're the only one that left. You raised your hand and then you were gone. I mean, from a his life sort of standpoint. I mean, what's interesting about this guy, Brother Jones here? Why? I mean, what did you guys find? I'm assuming you dug into what made him special or why he was relevant to be a movie. Like, what's some interesting stuff about him that's made him stand apart?
Well, he went through a very unusual dating experience with his wife, who became his widow. And that's part of the struggle that he talks about, when he's trying to just pass the time with one of the cavers. I mean, one of the rescuers that's down there trying to help him out. We go into his backstory a lot with his wife.
He's like, I barely found her. She was so hard to find, and now?
Yeah. He fought really hard for her, and he spent years and years fighting for her when everybody was telling him to just let her go, you know? And it paid off for him, you know? And without spoiling it, you know, I'm not going to go into too much more of it.
Yeah, I think it's kind of like a man who's been fighting for this person that he loves for so long is now in a situation where he has to continue to fight for her. You know, he's finally married to her, and now he's got to fight for his own life for her, you know?
Yeah, there are those parallels in the movie.
How was it with Emily Jones Sanchez? I mean, when you guys had talked about, you know, the genesis of this film, how was it approaching her and trying to get her involved in the project and getting her blessing too as well? I mean, how did you even scope that?
Well, Isaac had this story kind of on his mind for a long time, and when he finally was in a position to make a movie and he wanted to do this one, he wrote up a treatment for it and told and came up with his take on it, on how to make it an inspiring story. And he just flew out to Texas and met with her, and he said, look, I want to do this, and I have to have your blessing, because if I don't, then we're just going to drop it and I'll leave it alone. But I really want to do this, and this is how I would do it. And she was hesitant at first. I mean, it would be hard for anybody. I mean, put yourself in her shoes to you know, open those wounds again, and especially after she had moved on and already remarried and had another kid with her new husband, you know. So that must have been really difficult for her. But she was eventually on board with it, and she was supportive the whole way.
Did she ever come out to the filming site or anything and help consult, or was it just kind of emails, gave her the blessing, and then, but she was hands off beyond that?
She came out several times. She did some interviews with some of the local news, and she met with the actor that was, well, the actress that played her in the film,
right.
And they had a long lunch and talked about like everything that happened, and so yeah, she was definitely involved. All the cast and crew got to meet her. We had some. It was a really kind of an awesome experience.
I can't imagine sitting down for lunch with somebody that's portraying you, and you're just like,
if you look at them, they look similar too. So it's kind of eerie in that sense. But our actress, she Alexis Johnson, she was so dedicated to doing this right. She just studied her every, like the way she talked, everything. She was full of questions for when Emily came out and sat down with her for lunch, and she started doing her hair like her, talking like her. You know, she did a really great job of just becoming her for this film.
That's great. So, I mean, as you guys come through this, are there any interesting stories, just like how you're able to pull some of this stuff off, or how the story came together in an interesting way, or a way that craft services messed something up in a really hilarious way? I mean, give us, well, you got any good stories from the making?
Throw her under the bus.
His sister did it. He did craft services, so we'll just say
it was delicious.
Oh man, best food ever.
Would hire again. A++.
Funeral potatoes for days.
On a low budget film like this, you have to know where to put the money. And when you're paying people, you know, their minimum, you want to make sure that they're fed well, because, you know, if not, they'll be mutiny. So we made sure that, you know, we had decent meals for everybody. Actually, they were so good so often that people were like, can we just get pizza sometimes? And I'm like, well, okay. If that's what you're asking for, cool.
Hot, you know, and ready. Actually, I have a question about this. So when you're making really, really small movies like this, how does it work with – is everyone you're dealing with a member of SAG? Do you have to pay people at scale? Or is this just sort of an off-the-books thing and you're just doing it?
This is definitely not union. Yeah.
Yeah, I figured.
I mean, there are some ways that you can use union people like actors if you need to,
yeah.
And still have it be an independent film that's not SAG or anything like that. But for this, it was ultra low budget, which means under $250,000. When it comes to kind of how we were able to pull this off, I remember your question before. We had to have a lot of cooperation with the actors, because we asked them to do things, not that they were necessarily like dangerous or anything, but they required a lot of endurance. Like, we saved a lot of the close-up shots of our main character in the cave upside down, and he really was upside down, for the very end. So we had like the last 2 days of him just 12-hour days flipping himself upside down for minutes at a time to get the scene done.
That's crazy.
That's a trooper. Did you have to, I mean, I imagine you know, you're making a film, and of course you want to have good spirit and camaraderie about it. But given the fact that in many ways is sort of it's a solemn story in many ways. Mm-hmm. Like, did that factor into the way you went about carrying out the filming? I mean, were you guys just very kind of calm and measured as you went through it, or did you still allow yourselves to laugh and have a set and screw up and do things? Like, I just don't know how I would balance that if I were doing something that sort of honored someone who died tragically.
Definitely. I mean,
but
some
still
of the
be
scenes,
human.
Yeah. Some of the scenes required everybody to be pretty reverent to what we were doing, but for the most part, we were able to go about our business and normally. I mean, we set the tone for the whole thing at the very beginning. I think Reg was here for that. We had the whole family, his whole family, immediate family, and his widow, and anybody that was like directly involved with him and invested emotionally in this film. We had them all come in, and we did a read through with all of the actors. So they went through all of their lines. They went through everything that we were going to shoot and so they would know exactly what would happen, and they would know who's playing who and how they would, you know, not exactly how they would do the performance, but they would get a good idea of what this movie was going to be before we even shot it. And it was really great for the cast and crew to be involved in that.
It was pretty emotional. Honestly, I don't think anybody didn't cry while we were having that read through. I mean, it was almost funny how many people were crying.
Yeah.
But we did have a lot of fun outside of the seriousness. We really did. We had a blast.
It kind of reminds me, like, when you watch like a Breaking Bad blooper reel or something, right? And you're used to it being such a heavy thing, and then you got Walt laughing and you're like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
What's going on here?
Well, I think sometimes the only way you can get through stuff that's so difficult is by being able to
to exhale a little bit here and there, you know, right. to laugh and to find that balance again and reset yourself. I think if you were just a dirge getting through stuff, it would probably be more difficult as time goes on.
It was. And there were some points, you know, as on any film set, that things got tense and people got upset or frustrated about certain things, but we just had to take a step back and remember why we're doing it and remember that, yeah. you know, we were making movies for a living at the very least, you know, and that's something that we've all dreamed of doing. Almost everybody on set it was their first feature. And so to have everybody come together for something like that and just keep that in mind, really helped to keep things balanced emotionally on set.
And was the whole cast LDS? I mean, this have an LDS focus, or were you just kind of, not that it matters, I'm just curious.
No, that's a great question. Normally we do, like my brother Isaac and I, we've been making music videos for Imagine Dragons and stuff like that. And we had this thing where we were proud of the fact that everybody that was on the gold music video for Imagine Dragons was from Utah, you know? And I think
finally
too. Yeah.
It's what the people have been calling for, finally.
You're the only ones brave enough to make them all from Utah.
You have shattered the fry sauce ceiling, my friend.
Fry sauce, I love it. No, but yeah, so for this one, it wasn't all completely Mormons and Utahns. There's a great production designer that I knew from school out in Los Angeles, and I knew he could do a great job for recreating the part of the cave where John Jones got killed. So we had to recreate that out of foam, and he was instrumental in that. And
oh, cool.
There were a lot of local people that, like, for example, that worked on 127 hours that did the exact same thing, but they were out of our price range. So in some instances, we brought in people from out of town. Not too many. I think it's just the production designer and our two lead actors that were from out of town. Everybody else was pretty much in state, and I think Mormon, but I didn't ask everybody.
But you're telling me that Danny Boyle did not consult on the movie. That's what you're telling me.
Did not, no. But his production designer did help us out a little bit. Yeah.
Well, that's cool, man.
Now, what's the strategy? Well, because there's a... I mean, if you make this an all-out Mormon film, right? Like, try and push it out through Deseret Book, there's an audience there. It's
definitely
likely not as big, but I mean, I feel like there's probably some risk associated with going... being seen in some circles as sort of a predominantly LDS film, and then trying not to be. I mean, can you talk about your strategy in launch and like where you see the audience and sort of how you're positioning?
Yeah, Reggie,
so there's this kind of thing happening in Utah where nobody wants to make an LDS movie anymore. They don't like LDS themes.
That's because they saw The Home Teachers and they're just
Home Teachers was fine. Church Ball is where it all went down.
Whatever. All right.
One of those, you know, five or six movies that didn't quite
cough, hailstorm, cough. Yes.
That's terrible. Anyway, so you know, and it's not so much that there aren't good Mormon themed stories. I think there's plenty. I think that the thing that we're running into, and this is something that I've learned a lot through studying stories, is there's message movies which try to – like they intentionally try to teach you something, and there's movies with themes. And a theme is not as – you know, it's not as preachy. It's not as – you know. And so I think one of the main goals really of this film was to – they didn't want an LDS film. They wanted it to be applicable to all audiences. And but the fact that the man was LDS and it happened in Utah, you know, it's hard to avoid some of those things. So there's a little bit of those, you know, LDS culture in there, but it's not heavy-handed, and
it's
that's kind
secondary.
Of
the, yeah, it's not central
yeah.
story.
Yeah, and that's what I think we've seen a lot of the past couple of years. I mean, you're trying to make faith-based or wholesome movies, but not just kind of drive home that everyone is Mormon. Sure. I think it's just to find like everyone is Christian or of someone with values or et cetera, which makes sense too because you want a broader audience at the end of the
day. Yeah, and there's some Mormon like filmmakers that make movies about Mormons that try too hard not for it to not be Mormon. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it has a church scene. You could tell it's an LDS church inside, but it's got a big old cross behind the pulpit, you know? So it's like, okay, I think the Bible Belt kind of sees through that a little bit. And it doesn't, I don't know. It may not come across as
they recognize that sisal on the walls from a mile away.
We're never going to win the Bible Belt, people. Nixon ruined it. It's over. Just let it go, Mormons. It's fine. We can play elsewhere. It's going to be good.
Yeah.
So the movie starts, what, the 16th, right? This Friday?
This Friday, yep.
16th. And is it all over Utah? Is it in limited markets elsewhere? Where can people see this?
It's in all Megaplex theaters in Utah. There are a couple theaters in Arizona. I think it's called the Haskins Theaters. And then a couple theaters in Idaho, in Boise and Idaho Falls, that will start the second weekend, so the 23rd. And the hope is that it will do really well and it will expand from there. But for now, Megaplex Theaters probably your best bet.
And we're told that the best indication of whether it's going to spread or how much it's going to spread is based off of opening weekend numbers. So we encourage anybody that wants to see it to go see it opening weekend to help us get it out to more theaters.
Come on, you people. Go see this movie. Yeah. About the Nutty Petty Caves.
We guarantee this will be better than Meet the Mormons. Okay? Go see this.
Yeah. We're trying to get the whole Jell-O Belt, but we still need Southern California.
We're not part of that. Thank you. Southern California is not part of the Jell-O. Let's Orange be County, careful then, Brian.
Come on, Orange County.
Irvine, Brian. Jeff, we've all been there. Come Brian. On.
Orange County is many terrible things, okay? Shopping centers, housing tracts, Carl's Jr., but it is not part of the Jell-O Belt. I draw the line somewhere. Let's be careful.
Isn't that where...
Like any rich, privileged kid from the Orange County... You demand to be something you are not.
I'm from a city called Placentia. It's one eye away from being Placenta. You think I have much to brag about? Come on.
I'm from Wyoming. I'm one of the 10 people there. Yeah. So I totally understand.
So we need to go see it opening weekend so Reg and his family can see it in Wyoming.
All right.
There we go.
We'll do it, so, you guys. This is great. Thanks for coming on with us.
Yeah. So Reg Flake and Brian Fugel of The Last Descent, go see it in theaters this starting Friday on the 16th. And we want to thank you guys for taking the time to be with us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Our pleasure. Well, that was very nice of them to join us.
It was delightful.
We enjoy the guests, folks. It's nice for people to think of us and spend time with us. So good times. That's going to be
it. It's like a birthday card, but in your words.
Yeah, pretty... Pretty much, but that's going to be it for this week's show then.
No. Yeah, as always, people, you can email us. We will read the emails. In fact, I'll go read them right now as I'm finishing this. Read the emails, and you email us at contact@thisweekinmormons.com or visit thisweekinmormons.com for all your exciting things.
Absolutely. Folks, if you join us on social media, and we encourage you to do that, if you liked this episode... There's a Facebook post attached to it. Share it. Leave a comment on it. You know, we like seeing your interaction there and your thoughts on the episodes we do. It's always fun. And likewise, we're on Instagram.
We love it.
Instagram and Twitter. General Conference is coming up in a few weeks, folks, and you're going to want to be on Twitter to be part of the Twitter experience with us during General Conference. It's important. And we're going to have to do some stuff soon. We're going to have to talk about conference predictions, temple predictions. It's going to be a busy few weeks.
There's going to be a lot going on.
Lots happening. Once again, our thanks to Reg Flake and Brian Fugel from the film The Last Descent. So thanks again, guys, for being a part of the show with us. We appreciate that. And with that, This Week in Mormons is leaving you all for the week. So thank you, everybody. Al, I wish you well.
And I to thee do wed.
And another twim is in the can. You've been parking your bikes for the tenth time. You've been up on the roof again. So you're biding your time.